Thank you, Dr. Akai. Well, we now have a period of question and answers. As I mentioned before the break, we will also take Q&As from the first alternative fuels session. But before we do that, does anybody have any questions or comments to the panel on this particular one? Ambassador? And could I ask, could they be brief too, please?
Sure. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank and congratulate the three speakers. Once again, we have tons of information that we have to digest. I would like to take the opportunity, with the, if you allow me, to make a reference to the previous panel. And it's not a comment, it's just an article that has been written by a colleague of mine who is Under Secretary General for Energy and High Technology in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Brazil. And this is a one-page article, and it is at the entrance of the room at the right side. You know, there's a table over there, and those who are interested, the name of the article is Myths and Subsidies, and it deals with food security. So it would be interesting for those who are in the subject to have a look on the article. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ambassador. Professor Sausen.
I have a question or comment to Dr. Okai. I think it's a very nice approach. I think one comment is concerning the impact of water vapor. Mm-hmm. I think this might be a minor thing. The full water is for current fleet is a minor thing. You can double this by a factor of two, maybe a factor of three. It gets larger, of course, by this amount, but not really significantly, unless you fly really much higher, which I guess you're not planning to do this. What might be of concern, that's an open question, is that you produce more contrails when you fly hydrogen-powered aircraft because the conditions to form contrails are higher, mm-hmm. and most probably the particles in the contrail will be smaller than in traditional contrail from a kerosene-powered aircraft.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the comment. And of course, the contrail is a big concern. And my understanding is that I introduced the EU study, Cryoplane, did some studies on the contrail effect, and contrail making mechanism is a bit different because compared to the jet fuel, because the current jet fuel contrail is made the nuclei is a particulate, so the hydrogen has no particulate emission, so the aerosol makes the contrails. Some the structure will be difficult, different, but the amount will be larger. And the cryoplane study recommended that changing the altitude to minimize effect. But the, as for me, this is a future study, and I think that this is very important factor. Thank you very much.
Dr. Maurice would like to just make a quick comment.
Right. I certainly wanted to thank Dr. Sausen for making that comment and also encouraging your research to consider life cycle analysis, because how the hydrogen is produced is going to have a footprint. And then the fact that there would be quite a lot of changes in infrastructure that in itself would be a creation of a lot of new structures within airports, et cetera, that would add to that footprint. And I realize that makes entry of something so radically different difficult, but I think that we need to think broadly about our environmental footprint.
Okay, some more quick questions. Can I go towards the back this time? Anybody? Andrew Herdman from the Association of Asia Pacific Airlines.
Thank you. We've had two very good sessions, and I'll make a general comment drawing on a number of points made by the speakers. We learned that additional fuels might be better than alternative fuels, and that's a reminder that jet fuel is jet fuel. and it performs in the same way, combusts in the same way, produces the same thrust, and produces the same CO2 emissions. The differences in the CO2 footprint lie in the life cycle analysis that's been touched upon in some detail by the previous two speakers. And it reminds us that when we come to the question of carbon accounting and putting a price on carbon, and the key is, this is the key to incentivizing the adoption of these fuels. A point very perceptively made by Nancy Young was that because these are drop-in fuels and will be mixed with other fuels, accounting for the lower life cycle CO2 at the point of use, i.e. the airline, will be extremely difficult. Some ETS schemes have given a green light, if you like, zero rating or preferential rating, as we just heard from Luisa Morelli. But the difficulty here is really the incentive to the adoption of biofuels has to be in terms of the CO2 benefits during the biofeedstock growing phase. And until those are in place, we're stuck in this initial phase of not being able to get adoption. So, and to Jane Hooper's comment that reporting is important, again, it comes back to reporting at what stages. So the point I simply want to make that panelists may wish to comment on or not, is that this whole question of carbon accounting is a key aspect of driving forward the biofuels agenda, the alternative fuels, the additional fuels agenda for aviation, and one I think that we need to address. And it ties into some of the other discussions we're having about carbon credits and carbon markets. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the back? Chris Lyle from the UNWTO.
Thank you. Two excellent series of panel presentations, I think, and very thought-provoking. Paul Steele referred to the need for standard methodologies for carbon life cycle calculations, and that was echoed by Guilherme Freire in the same session and now Lourdes Maurice. And I believe Luisa Morelli has given us some guidance as the way to go on this. But Luisa and Charles Schlumberger in particular both showed us that there are tremendous differences according to the source of the alternative or additional fuel. So my question is, and it's addressed to really both panels and including in particular Jane, is can and should ICAO aim at developing alternative or additional fuel certification standards which would include a full life cycle assessment component, i.e. saying that this one's okay, this one's not so good? That's the question.
Would you like to answer that, Jay?
We have had very interesting discussions on the sustainability criteria or how we are going to include life cycle analysis within our remit or not. And as many of the speakers mentioned, we are not an agency that specializes in life cycle analysis. There is a lot of research establishments and standard setting establishments in these areas that are already working on that. And I think that if we are talking about the sustainable fuels that will be used also by aviation, we will have to fit in within that criteria. So I don't really, so far, in our constituency and in the discussions that we have carried in ICAO so far, in the conference, etc., we have not seen a specific role for ICAO in determining life cycle a criteria. But, of course, in following up the developments and ensuring that in our discussions that will be a component that we'll be taking into account.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to? Okay, will you press the red button?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. First of all, I'd like to thank all the speakers for their interesting presentation. And my comments relate not only to, it straddles all the panels, the past, this one, and the next one. And the panels that are handling these issue of alternative fuels, which to my mind, well, in reality, they are non-fossil fools, and we can call them NFFs. Anyway, my comment is that investors in development and deployment of these fuels, I think they should look at things only, not only from the perspective of the fact that we're dealing with emissions reductions, but also from the point of view that, from the perspective of the fact that the world doesn't have an inexhaustible supply of fossil fuels, and that sooner or later we're going to run out of what we even consider not to be so environmentally friendly, and that as such, it's a matter not only of emissions reduction, but a matter of energy security at the end of the day. And therefore, I will urge the financial institutions, World Bank and others, not to lose sight of this fact and to take that into consideration in allocating funds for development and deployment of alternative fuels or non-fossil fuels. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a lady over there who'd like to make a comment.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Maryam. I'm from UAE General Civil Aviation. It's my first time with ICAO. But I'm coming from a chemical engineering background. Alternative energies is a new topic which has been highly invested by many scientists and engineers. And I'm covering both sides. I used to attend last year a huge conference with the engineers for the alternative energies. It is a challenge for us to go for an alternative energy because it's not just the final product, it's the whole production stream. And as elaborated by Ms. Louisa, the life cycle consideration, there is a huge environmental damage might occur or impact while we are producing the final product. So if we are going to be, as an aviation sector, leading or driving the, emphasizing on the production of the alternative fuel, we have to assure that it's always aligned with the infrastructure department, development department, government department, so we can just bridge the gaps. And from my country, everyone knows that we are an oil country, although we are producing or trying to invest in the alternative energies through different projects with the Masdar, with Arena, with and other companies. So just bear in mind that this is a huge, huge challenge for the whole government or the state, and we have to have a national plan to go for it. Second, I have a question for Mr. Dr. Okai. I used to work in the hydrogen power as a research, and it was 2 years back. I remember there is huge investment in the United States for the hydrogen power, and although there is some safety consideration to use it in the aviation. And I cannot recap, there was a huge accident in this regard in the aviation sector. And one more thing, the volume of the hydrogen, still it's a concern about how you solve the volume of the hydrogen power.
I didn't understand the second question. First one is safety.
First question is
Could you please repeat the second question?
The volume of the hydrogen gas.
Volume?
The volume. If you need to carry, use a hydrogen power for an airplane, I remember they used to tell me that you have to have another airplane carrying just the hydrogen power. It's not compressed, it's not liquefied. Liquefied?
Okay. Yes, the first one is so. We think that anyway, to introduce the hydrogen, the aviation fuel, we need to have some social consensus. Yes, everything. I think the gaseous hydrogen is easy to handle, but some liquid hydrogen is a bit a danger. For this reason, the handling and storage technologies are a big concern, and we need to do more about the technical research. And for the second one, so there's a big competition between the melting weight, the melting volume. So through the feasibility studies, there are some benefits. Benefits is prevailing at this moment from these studies. But the handling, still the handling the cryogenic fuels may weigh more. So we need to further on continue the actual fabrication study to confirm the issue of the volume.
Okay, perhaps this is answering your question. Perhaps you can continue that afterwards. Louisa, would you like to say something?
No,
will you? Okay.
Yes,
yes, please do so. Press your button again.
Yeah. With respect to the jet engine fitted to this aircraft, do you think that we should make some investigation for a new type of jet engine like ramjet engine or supersonic, and of course what that make some emphasis to the structure of the aircraft, that change all these parameters of this aircraft? It needs more than to have some investigation on a type of fuel. What I'm talking about do you see that when we increase the aircraft velocity and use a laser to be more supersonic, it will be decreasing the specific fuel consumption, and then it will, of course, decrease the CO2 and so on?
Quick answer. Can we just have a quick reply?
Okay, thank you for that.
Pardon?
I'd like to know.
Yeah, let's let Lourdes.
Okay, so to make the speed higher, so the fuel consumption increases because of the larger drag, but so the total time of the flight is shortened. So intrinsically, we can have some solution. And in our concept, the single flow pass turbojet engine can operate up to hypersonic. So turbojet engine technology can be utilized not only for the subsonic to the supersonic and hypersonics. But so we need to minimize the so the change of the design for safety and other purposes.
Okay.
This is my opinion.
Yeah, if I could just let's see, I had pressed my button.
There
we go. If I could perhaps offer you some of the reports that we have done on life cycle analysis, because we started off from looking at a variety of fuels, and including hydrogen, and laid out that from a life cycle, really something that looked like the present fuel was the best way to go. And if I might remind you as well that neither a ramjet nor a scramjet can take off by itself, so now you would be looking at a hybrid cycle to get you off of the ground, which is weighed on the aircraft. But the point is that has been broadly looked at. And while I have the microphone, have been working very hard on getting to a standardized life cycle analysis, and to the point of should ICAO have work on its own methodology, I would propose that would actually set us back, because you would have an opportunity for divergence, and you already have ANSI organizations setting standards and other organizations setting standards. So what I would hope ICAO does is encourage us to work within those standards and not set off on its own. Thank you.
Okay. Let's have one last quick question. Anybody towards the back? Gentleman towards the end there.
You can hear me?
Yes, please say your name.
Okay, I will try to make it quick because you should be angry.
Yep.
I speak on my own behalf. First, a question for my colleague from Europe. So I see that there is some sustainability rules that are defined in Europe at Europe for European country level, but does it mean that Europe will not accept any biofuel coming from other areas in the world with lower sustainability standards? So, and just as a remark, aerospace contributes to 2% of the CO2, if I notice well. What about the side effect of biofuel in agriculture? We have some fact today. Agriculture is not fuel efficiency. It consumes a lot of water and contributes to deforestation, and we all know that trees help to take some CO2. So, as far as I understand, perhaps biofuel will perhaps increase this effect, especially if we want to produce whatever the season, whatever the soil. Example in the desert. So the other point is perhaps there is a big issue of food independence. It has been already noticed, and we have already know 2 years ago some food crisis. And if it is not done in Europe, for example, it will be done, for example, in Africa. And so for Africa, I don't know if we look at the wool life cycle. All that player at part of, because it's great to see the breakthrough in technology and the will to fight against the environment CO2. But there is a lot of partner here, but perhaps the most effect people in the world are not represented to say what are their concerns. Thank you.
Okay, just a quick answer. First of all, the first question about the import of biofuels. Well, it's clear that if a biofuel anywhere it's produced does not respect the sustainability criteria imposed by the European legislation, it cannot be included in the 10% target for biofuels, so it will not have market in Europe. This is valid not only, as I said in my presentation, not only for biofuels produced in Europe, but also for imported biofuels. So that's the main requirement of the sustainability criteria and of the legislation. About the impact of agriculture, I thought I was about clear enough saying that the first generation biofuels have a big impact on agriculture and on a number of issues which I didn't have time to mention on the water use. And for example, as I said, in the life cycle analysis of biofuels, the methodology implemented in Europe, we are accounting for emissions from agriculture, not only carbon stocks emissions from land use change, but also nitrous oxide emissions, for example, for the use of, for cultivation, the use of fertilizers, which is a big contributor in the agricultural emissions. We are accounting for the impact on water, etc. So I think that the issue of the first generation biofuels in agriculture is really considered in Europe. The only point that for the moment is still left aside is what I said, the indirect land use change effects. The Commission is working on this and has to report to the Parliament and the Council by the end of 2010. We will have a public consultation. This is something really new that I can say. We will launch this public consultation in June, so we are also working intensively to address this, which is the last remaining point. So I think that the life cycle methodology implemented in Europe is very clear. And as I said, it will refer also to any type of biofuels in use for aviation, because even if they are second generation biofuels, the life cycle methodology is clear enough also for second generation biofuels.
Thank you. I think we're going to draw this session to a close now. It's important that we actually start after lunch promptly, so I'm afraid this lunch break's a little bit shortened to barely 55 minutes. Lunch actually isn't available outside, but it is available, I'm told, from the ICAO cafeteria, which is on the fifth floor. And we do hope that you do come back. because we have a very important session this afternoon, which will be attended by Mr. Roberto Kobe Gonzalez, the president of the ICAO Council. So we do hope you return promptly. I'd just finally like to thank our three panelists for their presentations, and we'll see you later, hopefully.